When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Talking! Come on, you yellows. Flying high below this Wembley archway sky today.
Welcome to The Original, the Talker United Yellow Army podcast brought to you each week by Guy Henderson and Richard Hughes of the Herald Express and Devon Live. We'll talk you through the latest news from Plainmoor. We'll chat to the people making the news around the club. You can find us in the Talker United channel on the Devon Live website, on Spotify and on iTunes.
So it's me and you, David. No Guy today. He's at some conference somewhere doing some tea and coffee, I should imagine, and free sandwiches.
Good for him.
Yeah, we're sitting in a car outside Plainmoor in the pouring rain. It's been an interesting press conference today with Gary talking about Yeovil, which is painful for all of us to think about. But I think we'll talk about that later on and dissect that game and the upcoming game against
Havant and Waterlooville. All-weather pitch. Yeah. Here we go.
Indeed. So very, very short intro today. We've got a chat with, hopefully, so I'm saying this before I've recorded it, but I'm supposed to be ringing Nick Broderick at 11 o'clock-ish.
So, the Supporters Trust.
Yeah, so yeah, we'll
after
have
their meeting.
Indeed, which we'll also talk about in a minute, but that's all of the future. You can hear the rain. Let's go and talk to Gary Johnson. We'll be with you on the other side of Gary Johnson.
Gaffer, I think it's safe to say that Tuesday was a frustrating night for everybody here at Plainmoor, but going by your post-match comments, I don't think anyone's feeling that any more than you and the players.
Mm. No, we were disappointed with the start, because it was important to get a good start, and they got their goal pretty early, 20 minutes or so, and that gave them more power to their elbow, and we couldn't quite get into it. Of course, they went 2-0 up, and then we had a Brad's chance just before half time, straight after their goal, and that would have given us 45 minutes to, you know, try to get back into it. The second half, we did a little bit better, but we were definitely the second best team on the day, and I always say on the day because things always change and things happen. But by the time we play them next time, you know, we could be a lot closer, hopefully, to them. That's our hope. But, you know, credit to them on the day, they were better. And we've got to try and get a little bit of consistency, because a few days before that, we played well against Bath and deserved it. And they were up there as well. So it's, frustrating is the word we use, because we have a good game and a not so good game, then a good game, not so good game, sort of thing. So we always have meetings with the lads today, actually. It will be, because obviously we played Tuesday, Wednesday, they needed off, and then we look at the review, and we hope that they take from it that some of them needed to do a little bit more. None of them are out there not trying, you know. They all go out of that dressing room, you know, with fire in their belly. Now, what puts that out sometimes is a goal against, but we've got to make sure that they don't feel that way. It should just make you more determined to get the game back. And, we all get a little bit disappointed for the fans, really, because, you know, 1 week we're good, next week we're not so good. But we'll see. We've got a tough, good patch coming up, and so we got to stay bright. We still, you know, we got to stay confident in the players that we know can play, and and eventually you hope to get that consistency from them.
You've mentioned before that often the case with players at this level is consistency, and obviously you're being proven right in some many ways on this. Like you say, 3 days before the Oval game, took on Bath City, who were riding high, one of the top scorers in the league, managed to keep a clean sheet and then got the 3 points. You've mentioned about consistency. Obviously, with so many teams locked, you can put 6 points between 3 points and almost 14th. Mm. The chance is there for every team in amongst that group to go on a run and actually finish it pretty high up in the table.
Yeah, well, Yeovil are the team. Yeovil and Averley are two teams that are on their very good run at the minute. Now, 10 games unbeaten or whatever it is, 11, 12, what Yeovil's unbeaten run is a very good run. And if you're going to get what we all want, the promotion, then at some stage we've got to have a very good run. But it's early days. You know, I've been at a lot of a couple of promotions where we were behind at this stage. We were behind at this stage in this league when I first came here, when we was it 14th in September or something. So, you know, we know that you can make it up, and that's what we've got to try and achieve and try and keep the boys' belief in themselves and their teammates, and I think we've got that. It's just circumstances sometimes. We lost Callum pretty early, didn't we? We're always all disappointed that we haven't got our regular players regular enough. You know, the injured lads who give us that experience that was needed against Yeovil. So we can't cry over that. It is what it is. Most of them are impact injuries, so they're injuries that they get through kicks and etc. You know, it's not, no one's fallen off a ladder or something like that and done something stupid. But so you know, we'll keep going. It'll turn around, and we're dedicated to get the job done.
Because it's not just the injuries and the number of injuries that's hampering a side, but it is a lot of the experience, isn't it? When you're looking at likely Tom Lapsley, Aaron Jarvis and Ross Marshall seem to leave the field early on Tuesday.
Well, I would say that it actually gives a chance to the other players in your squad that might not have got the chance had the other lads been fit. And so they've got to give me a problem in wondering who do you pick for the next week. Now, if you win a game, then generally it's easy to pick the next team. We need that competition of all the squad being fit, and that sort of sharpens up everybody, because that competition just, you know, makes everybody compete for that place, and in the end the best man gets the job, or the most consistent man gets the job. And that's what we've got to get, really. But our season, the way the season's gone was exactly how the last two games have gone. Played well against Bath, and they were there, up there, and didn't play well against Yeovil. You know, but I think at the moment Yeovil have got that strong squad that they can fall back on, if you like. We will have a strong squad when we get our squad fit, you know, and that's the important thing. And when we do, I think we'll see a massive turnaround.
Now, on the plus side, you've added to your squad this week with the signing of Ethan Archer on the bench on Tuesday. Can you tell us a little bit about him and what to expect from him?
Yeah, he's a little bit like when we had Calvin Kalala. You know, he's very quick and nimble on his feet. And he can go past people. He can play wide, or he can play up front, but not as the target man. It was an opportunity that we had. We had a look at him a couple of times after watching a video. Then we saw all his best bits, but we want to know all his other bits as well. And watching everything and watching him play and getting recommendations from people that have played with him and watched him. And there was a few other clubs that were interested at the time, which was nice. But we got him in quick, and we worked with him for a week or two, and he come up trumps. We thought, yeah, we you know, he can make things happen. He's obviously got to get a little bit fitter because he's been playing part-time. But he's a fit lad anyway. You know, there's no fat on him at all. In fact, we've probably got to put a bit on him. But when we release him to the public, then I think people will see why we signed him.
Now, putting aside the Yeovil defeat for one moment, the home form has generally been pretty good here so far. You've talked about how we've almost also had a case of fortress play more at times. Yeah. With the trip to Havant and Waterlooville, a team that actually, ironically, has inflicted the only defeat on Yeovil, well, the only victory they've had was against Yeovil. Now time to focus on the away form a bit?
Yeah, our away form is, I think, 7 games, 7 points. So we've definitely got to spin that round a little bit, for sure. We can't always rely on, as we've seen, just our home games. And so we've got to go away and be resilient. Every team can beat every team in this league, as you've just said. You know, that was the bottom team beating the top team early on. And they'll be fighting for their lives because they'll be saying, we've got to get out of trouble now. And not later on in the season. So new manager came in. So we're still going to have to play well to win a game away from home on AstroTurf, of course. And we're going to be getting those games, and we've got to find a way. Hopefully, starting this week.
I think you've always been very consistent that you believe this squad and this team have the ability and the talent to be a promotion side. On Tuesday night and on odd occasions, do you think the team and the squad has, and we didn't have Tom Lapsley out there and we didn't have Kevin Dawson out there, that ability when things aren't going well to fight their way out of it, sort of,
Well, our game.
I'm sure you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean. Our game changed when Asa came on.
Yes.
Then all of a sudden, his little bit of experience and intelligence, if you like, helped us almost get back in the game. You know, the third goal killed us a little bit because we was starting to get a little bit of a head of steam. And in the second half, we did have a lot more play than we did in the first half, even though the play wasn't efficient and good enough to warrant a goal. You know, we were giving the ball away too often, we know that. But yeah, those players that are out there, a lot of them need the experience of more experienced players. And we've got them in the club, but unfortunately they're in the treatment room at the minute. And of course, they're the hardest ones to find because everyone's looking for them. And as we all know about, you know, family, kids, relations, you know, you've almost got to find somebody over the road there, you know, to for them to be comfortable to come here, because there's a lot of clubs. If we think they're good enough, there's probably a lot of clubs in between that also think they're good enough. But at the end of the day, it'd be at the end of the season, that's when you judge whether we've been lucky or unlucky, or whether we've been good or not good.
Yeah. But I just wondered whether that, obviously you've mentioned before, and it's obvious that you'd love to try and find another Aaron Jarvis type player up front, but that ingredient which Gary Johnson teams have always had in midfield, of that feistiness and everything.
Yeah.
Was a little bit lacking on Tuesday night.
Absolutely.
I wonder whether that was something that's occupying your mind at the moment.
It's occupying our mind, but it always does, because you've always got to cater for people that might leave the club, people that might get injured, so you have to, you know, have people in line, if you like. There's not many people that is like for like sometimes. You know, we've come up with a couple of good ones that are irreplaceable, if you like, or almost irreplaceable. So, as I say, unfortunately, they're not available to us at the moment, but will be. You know, they will be. But meanwhile, we've got to be picking up points for when all these lads come back.
Yes, yeah. And on that front, you know, we ask most weeks, don't we, about how Kevin's getting on. Obviously, Tom's in that in the mix of that at the moment. Tom is he a fairly short term one with
Yeah, program, I or? Think yeah, it's a fairly short. I won't give a time because I'm not a medical man. I only get it from the medical team, and then sometimes somebody comes back a little bit quicker. Sometimes it takes a little bit longer. Sometimes. You know, like people are having a scan and they have to have another scan a bit later on and you know, to see how it's developing and whether it's, so there's periods of time when you say, I think it's here, but then it suddenly might be a couple of weeks later.
Sure. Is Tom's a recurrence of the problem he had before or you know, when he was out for a couple of games?
Yeah, well, you don't like to talk about injuries, not. No. I'll tell you.
It looked like his foot to start with. It's
something that he needed to come off with.
Because
Tom knows, with his experience, he knows when he's on that danger mark.
Yeah.
That if he does another sprint, he's going to be out for a little while longer. Do you know what I mean? So and you trust him.
Yeah.
You know, some of the others, you say, get out of there, you tart. You know what I mean? So, he came off with something. Callum, in the end, had to come off with something, Yeah, that's right. But
And Kevin, he's back in rehab now, Kevin Dawson?
Yeah, it's when they start getting on the pitch that you know they're...
And he's not
they
there
call
yet.
It on the pitch. No, when they're running and that we sort of said we mentioned November and it's still early November. So you know if we're correct, it's probably going to be end of November, beginning of December. November. Yeah, but
and then again, he's got to get up and running again.
Well, again, it's not a 6 week program like pre season, but it's and then. When somebody's got something like that, you can't push them too quick, too early, and all that. So we have to gauge it as we go along. Yeah. But
and with Aaron, he's back in rehab now, presumably.
Yeah, Jarvis is in rehab. He's ecstatic, and we're all ecstatic for him because he's. It could have been one of three things, and fortunately. It was the lesser of the three evils. So even though, you know, it's going to be probably another few weeks from now, but at least we're going to have him for a big part of the season still.
Right, yeah. I mean, in your mind, ought he to be back before Christmas? Sort of thing?
Well, you'd like to think probably the new year, because I don't want to say things early. And then if he comes back, till Christmas, I'll be happy before then, I'll be happy to be wrong.
Right, so David Thomas of the Torbay Weekly. I was so tempted to say the Herald Express there because you spent so many years with us, but you have moved on. Different days. Have you really given much thought to Yeovil?
Oh dear.
I suspect it's been rolling around in your head, hasn't it?
I think all of us, hasn't it?
Yeah.
What a bad night. The performance. Look, the performance against Bath last Saturday was better.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that it was all singing and all dancing.
No.
And let's face it, United dominated that game and it needed a goal from a right back.
Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Damn good shot by Sean Dunellen, but it took a deflection on the way in for United to win that match.
Yeah.
The performance against Yeovil was simply, and Gary Johnson was the first one to admit it afterwards,
he did.
Simply not good enough.
Yeah.
And it wasn't good enough, not from just a football sense, although that was pretty poor. And we've just had a sort of bit of a private chat with Gary about this, haven't we, at the end of the press conference, that what our old friend Paul Bastard always describes as you've got to have a gangster in midfield.
Yeah, and we didn't have one.
And United simply do not have anybody that can win a tackle in midfield at the moment. Or certainly that was the evidence of Tuesday night.
Yeah.
And it is costing them big time at the moment. If you're an opposition manager preparing to play Torquay at the moment, would you be worried about too many of the physically worried, you know, about facing Torquay at the moment? No, you wouldn't. Now, so, there are reasons for that.
Yeah.
You know, no Aaron Jarvis, no Kevin Dawson, no Asa Hall on a regular basis, no Tom Lapsley. These are the players that bring... This is lower division football we're talking about now. It's not Trivial Pursuit, is it? Or a chess match. It's a physical game. And you, in lower division football, if you don't tackle, you lose.
After the game, that five key players are missing. And when you list them, like you just did, Aaron Jarvis... Mark Holstead, who also in goal.
Yeah.
Callum Dolan went off early on with what might be an injury. We're
Lapsley,
not sure.
Dawson,
Lapsley and Dawson. Those five.
Obviously. Oh yeah.
Those five.
Yeah.
Were not available. Hall obviously came on.
No.
That's a big five.
It
to
is.
Be missing.
But that Torquay are not Welling.
Yeah.
Torquay
yeah.
are one of the big fish in this pool. We're supposed to be winning promotion in this league. Playoffs is an absolute minimum requirement, and now that United are 10 points behind Yeovil Town again, it's going to take an absolutely stonking run to do it, and I don't think many of us can see United putting that sort of run together at the moment, because they're so inconsistent. And with lacking those players, I can understand the supporters who feel, well, if we haven't got Dawson for 6 months, or we haven't got so-and-so, we've got to go out and get somebody.
Mm.
Now, you know, Gary Johnson has touched on, and we all know nowadays, the problems of persuading not 19, 20, 21-year-olds to come down. You can always do that at Torquay. You always have been able to and always will be able to do. But in this day and age of persuading a proper, experienced player, a Kevin Dawson, in other words.
A Tom Lapsley,
Tom Lapsley, to uproot family... girlfriend, partner, wife, kids, etc., etc., come down here is completely... The dynamics of all of that have changed. You'd think in 2023 that it would be easier for people to move around the country.
They
would
have been more secure,
Exactly. Yeah. Look, I'm just thinking through one or two of the United players at the moment. I can think of one whose partner is a... a doctor and a partner in a practice up in Hertfordshire. She's not going to move down here on the sort of wages that United can offer in lower division football. Mark Halsey's wife's a teacher, primary school teacher, lives in Chester, their two kids. He lives down here most of the time, and they come down because obviously schools have got holidays and stuff like that. That's the sort of commitment you've got to make, or players potentially have to make, to uproot and come down here. It's a big problem. I mentioned to somebody the other day, Plymouth Argyle, all credit to them, won the League One Championship last season. Crucially, their best recruitment thing was loan signings.
Yeah.
They've since gone and paid £1 million for two of them. But so those loans were far easier for Argyle, even at that level, to get and paying the wages that they're paying than permanent senior players coming down. Obviously, they got one or two. I'm not saying it's a completely black and white situation, but... that is the problem facing United, is to persuade, your Kevin Dawsons. I think at the moment, one United fan said to me the other day, can't we get a Danny Rackey down here at the moment?
Well, that's easy.
Danny Rackey was a single guy at a bit of a crossroads in his career and his life, and a move that nobody was quite sure whether it would come off actually did.
Mm.
But... The players of Rackey's type who have been around, played 250-odd, 300 games, something like that, are difficult to get. Everybody accepts that.
Matt Hockley was in the stadium on Saturday. Oh. I wonder if he's available.
Did he bring his boots? Yeah. But you know what I mean. So
yep.
United at the moment in midfield, without Lapsley, as soon as we knew on Tuesday night that Lapsley was injured...
I write it every time.
We all looked at each
never
other,
play
we?
As well without Lapsley
well,
as they do with him.
Because he brings that element of physicality and feistiness and running... and
determination,
all those. You know, Tom would be the first to say what a great passer he is.
No.
But I don't think many of us are all that bothered about that.
No,
you should have other people that can actually get on the ball and pass it.
Yeah.
Rabbited on too much of it already.
But looking forward to what you do then.
Tuesday was unacceptably because it's Yeovil. because it was potentially such a big game, you know, United had a chance off the back of the Bath win to really go out and make a statement sort of performance, even whatever the result happened to be at the end of
it. But even in the Bath game, David, we had nothing up front, and that's no disrespect to Brad Ash.
No.
But he was playing up front on his own, and he was crowded out. He wasn't getting the service, and that's exactly the same happened to Theo Williams, who I thought looked decent when he came on against Bath, and then that's how he ended up playing on Tuesday night. And he couldn't do that on his own up there.
No.
I mean, we're missing Aaron Jarvis up there phenomenally.
Big time.
Yeah.
And that's why one or two people have suggested, well, hold on a minute, let's try and play somebody else up there.
Yeah.
Somebody, you know, Azor Hall as a target. You and I can remember the days when Clint Bolton used to be shoved up from centre-half to centre-forward on a regular basis.
I'm not quite that old.
Well, you know what I mean?
Older
fans will remember that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I can remember Matt Elliott playing up front.
I can remember the Wayne Thomas playing up front for a couple of games. Yeah,
and just to provide that physical, you know, the Yeovil centre-backs on Tuesday night, easy street.
They didn't have anything to do, did
not
they?
Really, no. Because they were never worried about anything.
Not until Acer and Dylan De Silva came on at the end. And by then they'd won the game,
exactly.
So I don't think they were too worried.
So United somehow, and we're talking transfer market here, aren't we?
Yeah.
If they're not going to get these players back, if Jarvis and Dawson are not going to be back until best part of Christmas...
Yeah.
Then in order to give United, you can't be saying all the time, and I know Gary Johnson isn't sort of trying to sort of say this all the time, you know, well, from February onwards, we'll murder everybody.
Yeah.
It'll be gone by then. And so somehow, either in terms of finance plus scouting and thing, I mean, United have got to solve these problems, not in 2 months' time or 6 weeks' time when we get everybody back. But you've got to be picking up enough points in between now and then to give ourselves
a chance when we get...
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, there is a caveat to all this, that the club is quite prone to bringing in someone... And you know, after we've recorded these kind of things, so we have no knowledge of anyone coming in. You wouldn't be surprised if someone came in this week, would you?
Absolutely not.
Yeah.
Or even
today. You know what I mean?
Well, quite often it's usually on the day of a game.
Yeah,
young Ethan Archer came in on Tuesday during the day. All right, he had actually.
I think he'd been
at the club for best part of a week.
Yeah, yeah. I think if they're bringing someone in. That's more than Ethan Archer. No respect to Ethan Archer.
No.
Then they might want to sort of talk about that beforehand. But we shall see. We don't have crystal balls.
Yeah.
In the car.
Look, I mean, at the moment, the shame is that of United's form. You know, up 1 minute, down the next. Is that you go to Havant and Waterloo on Saturday? They're bottom of the league, all weather pitch.
Mm.
This becomes a huge game.
Should be a run-of-the-mill win.
It should, yes. I mean, you never go to a game like that assuming anything. Of course you don't. But all of a sudden, it's... I mentioned in our paper the other week, you know, in football, as in a lot of sports, you're either the hunter or the hunted.
Yeah.
United, and we all want to be the hunters, don't we?
Yeah.
At the moment, United are the hunted. Every single team that plays Torquay are going, yeah, come on.
Yeah.
That's the worry. And even Gary just now said, Havant and Waterlooville, he hinted, didn't he? Havant and Waterlooville, fighting for their lives, will be looking forward to Saturday, or potentially, I can't remember the exact words he used, but he hinted at that, didn't he? And United have got to handle that they'll be up against another team that's absolutely desperate to bring them down.
Yeah.
And this is the role that you get when you drop into these leagues as a big club. Yeovil have got new chairman, new money. And they're spending it.
Yeah.
Torquay have done that in the past, you know, in when they were first relegated to the conference, when United won this league five years ago.
Yeovil are now, basically.
Exactly,
yeah, yeah.
And we probably had the biggest budget in the division.
Yeah.
So we've been there before, and other teams are doing it. One little interesting thing. The United team that won this league 5 years ago, how do you think that side would fare against this current Yeovil side?
I think they'd beat them, David.
I do.
Quite handsomely.
Somebody came up to me on Tuesday night and said, what do you think? You know, Yeovil look as if they're nailed on in this league at the moment, didn't you? And I immediately thought, oh, I wonder how that side...
For a start, you've got a striker.
There you go. But it was an interesting thing, isn't it? I mean, what a good game that would be, wouldn't it? The United team of 2018-19 that won this league against that Lee Oval side. I'd love to go to that game and see it. I've got a feeling that United would win it.
We were strong that season. Once Gary came in and shaped up a couple of players, got Jamie Reeves scoring goals, and who was in midfield? So Connor was in midfield, was he?
Lemon Havens, Jake Andrews was in there. Of course, we had at the back, you had Ben Winter, Carl Cameron.
The defence. Joe Lewis came in afterwards, didn't he?
But it was very interesting to think how that match might
have turned out.
Okay,
let's talk about the big news overnight, David. So there was a fans forum set up by Torquay United Supporters Trust at the Live Meet Cliff Hotel last night. Wasn't a great turnout, but I think there was a turnout, passionate turnout. The MP Kevin Foster was there as well. It has been recorded, so what was said will be available.
I was unable to go, unfortunately, and I don't think you were either.
I didn't go. I did give Nick my apologies beforehand, and I think it was a fairly good-natured event with no one from the club there as well. Good-natured event. They talked through what are the perceived problems of other people in the room. And they had a vote at the end of the night to say, is protest a good way of going forward? I don't think there was any kind of particular protest in mind. And apparently the vote was overwhelmingly yes, protest going forward. Then at 11 o'clock last night, there was a statement from Torquay United, which to me was a little bit over the top. I don't know what you think.
Well, quite an event for United to make a statement in the first place.
Yeah, exactly.
Obviously.
First of all, we haven't had it. We've been asking for a statement.
Yeah, quite. It was quite a... In the current climate, it read as quite a combative statement.
Yes.
I wasn't at the meeting, and neither of you, so I didn't hear the exact wordage of what was said at the meeting.
Yeah.
In terms
so we have to be careful
of a protest.
That, without having heard a recording.
Yeah, quite. The club almost never comment on these things, and it has come out with quite a forceful statement. All right, the club does have certain responsibilities on match day for ensuring that all the rules and regulations are observed, that supporters are kept safe as far as possible, that violence or stuff doesn't happen. The club have a major responsibility in that direction, and they alluded to that in their statement, didn't they? I just think at the moment, and this may sound a bit like deliberately trying to throw oil on troubled waters.
Well, that's already been done.
I think the club's in a difficult position at the moment. When I say the club, I don't just mean the football club, the supporters, the whole body of the club.
Yeah.
Is things aren't great. We're relegated last season. Two and a half years ago, Ashton Gate seems like a million miles away, etc. Got relegated to the National League South, and they're not looking as we all want them to look, even at this level.
Yeah.
And in the end, the whole point about these things is Torquay United, Plymouth Argyle, Exeter City, Man United, etc., they've all got FC after their names.
Mm.
They're not carriages, they're not estate agents, they're not solicitors, they're football clubs.
Yeah.
And everything stands or falls on what happens out on the pitch.
Yeah.
And United, I don't believe that the current climate of unrest and dissatisfaction, none of that would really be surfacing as it is at the moment if the team was doing better on the pitch.
No.
So that produces the frustration and the anger. I think on the whole, most people would accept that the club is pretty well run off the pitch. Bills are paid, you turn up to play more on match day, stuff is in place, everything works, the pitch is absolutely tremendous, all that sort of stuff. The infrastructure of the club appears to be well run off the pitch.
Mm.
On the pitch, it's been a big major disappointment.
Yeah, yeah.
That feeds the frustration. And Nick Broderick, the chairman, was saying the other day, quite rightly, actually, part of the frustration is that our remit as a supporters trust is not actually to be banging the drum about what's happening on the pitch. It's, it's off it. So their frustrations about the lack of communication from Clark Osborne and George Edwards, the CEO, is one thing that quite a lot of us have felt over the last three or four or 5 years.
I don't need to say it. We've tried to get an interview with all of us. Even the BBC Radio Devon asked for it the other day.
There we are. And I think we're justified in wanting that. Yeah. But the fact is that the club itself is reasonably well run. It's well run. It's not as if, you know, look at Southend. It's not like bills aren't being paid and people are banging on the door or anything like that. And at the moment, I just think that the club is in a difficult enough position on the pitch as at the moment. There's huge pressure to get out this league, not next season, as quick as possible. Everybody's worried about what may happen. Clark Osborne's already covered losses of whatever it is, £6 million quid or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Everybody's worried that if United get trapped in this division, it's bad enough being trapped in the National League.
They are trapped in it with a massive debt.
Well, with a money owed to him, you know, would you then start to head down the road of maybe part time? Well, everybody's worried about all these things, and quite rightly so. That there's, you know, this is, there's a reason why people turn up each Saturday.
Yeah.
They don't have to. They come along because they're passionate.
That's a very good point.
They're passionate about the club. So it's passion that brings them through the turnstiles each week, and then you can't turn passion on and off. You're either passionate or you're not, aren't you? And I think that just rather to sort of stop babbling on, but the at the moment, I think everybody on both sides, the trust and so on, probably needs to calm down a bit here because if this spirals, you know, out of control, as it were, and turns into a real kind of like shouting match and I can't see a constructive way forward down that road.
No.
I think that the statement from the club, which nobody expected, and I don't think anybody expected the tone of it either.
Has had 42,000 views on Twitter.
Did it? Well, well done.
And that was at 9 o'clock this morning.
Yeah, yeah. So that everybody, and of course, it just feeds. It becomes a beast that feeds itself in the end.
My thoughts on it are: it was not needed. We need a statement. It wasn't the one we needed, and it just seemed to be too reactionary. No one was going to suggest that tennis balls were thrown into. As far as I can make out, someone talked about that because that happened at Reading. That was not what the vote was about. There was nothing really. I mean, in my head, there were 50 people there. They talked about the state of the club. That would have been fine. They might have voted on a protest, but most people don't want to protest. They just want to go and watch the game. If the club had left it alone, it probably would have been fine. But now what they've done is they've encouraged more people to be upset.
I think that's a reasonable point to make.
Yeah.
But I come back to the same whole point. You beat Bath last Saturday. If they'd beaten Yeovil on midweek and then they won anything, nobody would be talking about a protest.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the team's on the up and is in the right place. It's you create vacuums or voids or whatever. And one of the problems that Clark Osborne, who, let's face it, a lot of people could argue that Clark Osborne's been one of the best chairmen United have had for years. He's put shed loads of money in or covered shed loads of losses. Mm. The bills are paid. He's shown remarkable loyalty to nearly all his managers. He stuck with Kevin Nicholson when everybody expected him to go, including Kevin. He stuck with Gary Owers despite getting relegated to this league, and he stuck with Gary Johnson when a lot of people expected him to be sacked. So as a chairman, as a you know, most people would say, well, that's not a bad record for a chairman, but the fact of the lack of communication, the lack of the fact that he never comes to the games. And a similar sort of vein of communication problems with George Edwards, who to my knowledge and most people's knowledge works extremely hard covering not just this club but a couple of other businesses as well, etc., has created a void and a vacuum.
Yeah.
And voids and vacuums will always be filled by something.
Yeah.
And it's been filled increasingly when United are winning the National League and about to try and win promotion into the football, back to the Football League. No one's looking to fill that vacuum, but they are now because it's not happening on the pitch. That's the big problem. And at just at the moment, you don't want to be doing stuff that you don't need to be doing at the moment. Mm. And that statement from United, I can't see really what it achieves. The tone of it.
That's the point.
Anything else, you know. But we'll see. United do have responsibilities to the wider, you know, support base. Yeah. I'm trying to imagine what would happen if United had said nothing in the face of
we wouldn't be having this chat.
No, of course we wouldn't. Yeah. But could they then be criticised by the football authorities for not warning or whatever it is about the dangers of protests or whatever? I don't, you know, that's a moot point.
It's an interesting one.
Yeah. In other words, there are situations in which you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. Yeah. It's not great because all of a sudden, as frustrating as United's problems on the pitch are,
yeah,
we're now grappling with a load of with sort of problems off the pitch, which you don't want to be dealing with at the moment, do you? You know, and Christ's sake, it's beg your pardon, that it's difficult enough to get the team playing on the pitch at the moment, isn't it? And getting some results that they badly need. All this other stuff is not good, and it's not productive, is it? It's not getting us anywhere as a football club.
We're going to go and listen to my chat with Nick Broderick in a minute.
Absolutely. We should let the people who were at the meeting actually.
To be fair, I would have asked George Edwards so he could also say his side, but
The statement is there. Yeah. The statement is there.
So they both know what the answer to that would be.
The statement is there, and that's, you know,
they've released their statement. So Nick's got a good.
The club, which I'm sure we have to say is George Edwards, have made that statement.
Yeah.
And so they've had their say. We'll see where it goes. We've got away Havant and Waterloo away this
and then
Saturday.
We've got
Yeovil again in the trophy.
Yeah.
Not quite sure how many will
turn
up for that.
Well, yeah, that will be interesting to see what the crowd is like for
true.
That, because no one really cares about the trophy until you get to the later stages.
Quite. And then I think we're into, is it Taunton away or something like
that? Interesting times, David.
Never dull
being a Talk United supporter, that's right. We'll hopefully be able to talk about, if it's you here or Guy next week, we'll be able to talk about some wins next week.
Fingers crossed.
Or a win at least. Hi, Nick. Thanks for joining us on the podcast. Interesting night at the Fans Forum and an interesting statement from Talk United this morning. How's that left you feeling as Tust and you individually, I guess?
Well, thanks for asking me. Yes, it was an interesting night. We had, in total, including those who were on Zoom, around 150 fans. And it was an interesting meeting because people were saying what they felt about how the club is performing on and off the pitch. I should make it clear that the evening, although Tust organised it, it was an open evening, so there were non-Tust members present either on Zoom or actually in the audience.
Yeah.
And so it was a genuine open forum, and during it there were a lot of suggestions as to how we should proceed from now on, and clearly there was somebody from the club, they were invited to come and join us in person, but there clearly was somebody from the club who was on Zoom, which is no surprise, hence the statement which they issued late last night.
Indeed. The statement was quite critical of the meeting and suggested that there would be
some kind of protest in the future at a game. Was that agreed at all?
The major part of the contents of the statement are inaccurate.
Okay.
There was no agreement, there was no suggestion that there should be a pitch invasion or, I think as they put it, missiles thrown onto the pitch during the course of a match.
Yeah.
None of that is true. What was agreed by the end of the meeting was that there should be a peaceful sit-in after a game. We felt that that probably would be the match on the 2nd of December, the match against Tunbridge Angels, which we would hope would be lawful, because as Tust explained, as I explained to everybody last night, we cannot be involved in anything which would be unlawful. So we need to show solidarity and unity to the owner and the CEO that the fans are concerned about the direction in which the club is being taken.
Okay, that's fair enough. You don't foresee any kind of protest going forward that would be, you know, you obviously look into any kind of form of protest to see if it's lawful or not before carrying it out.
Well, we are taking advice.
Yeah.
From the FSA, that's the Football Supporters Association, just to be absolutely 100% correct and clear as to what action is lawful. And so we will be issuing a statement in due course once we have clarification from the FSA.
Cool. Did it surprise you, the timing of the statement, Nick?
Very much.
and the wording of it as well.
It almost appeared as if the statement had been written before the meeting took place.
Okay.
Anticipating what might have been decided. But we recorded the meeting last night, so if there's any need for evidence in the future, then we have a recording which we can release to the general public, certainly the fan base, for them to see if they weren't able to be there last night in person or on Zoom.
Do you think that the lack of communication from the owner and the CEO is a major reason why this has spiralled out of control slightly? Because if they just talked to the club, to the fans, I think a lot of the fans would be more understanding of the situation. After all, they have put a lot of money in, kept the club going on an even keel. You know, it's not a basket case.
Yeah, well, we don't dispute any of that.
Yeah.
Clark Osborne has put in, I don't know what the latest figure is, it could be probably something close to 6 million.
Yeah.
Yeah, we understand that. We understand that without his money, there may or may not be a football club currently at the moment. No one knows if something else might have transpired at the time when he took over the club.
Yeah.
But currently he is the owner, he runs the club, and the lack of the communication between him, his CEO, and the fans is the basis on which we held the fans forum last night.
Yeah, yeah.
Come on, you yellows, flying high below this Wembley archway sky today. Come on, you yellows, full of pride, buckle up for the ride of your...